Live from Los Angeles, it's the At-Home Edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights. We'll be swimming when we fly.
That's really awesome. I'm here to
look at the night sky. Look at the night sky where the stars have always shined.
Our host, the MC, the Minister of Change, Filippo Boccaccio.
So to say I am excited about this show is an understatement. To say I'm impressed about our guest is yet another one. There's so much I could say. We have titled this show thanks to the words given to us by our guest: virtue builds character, character unfolds destiny. And those words come from a famous person I'm sure John, our guest, is going to be talking about. However, I have to say that ever since we were introduced over a decade ago, I've been following this man and learning from him and just watching as he moves in the world and being very, very impressed and inspired. Of course, a lot of people can say that they have been inspired by our guest. He's a teacher, he's a coach, internationally renowned, a keynote speaker, very much in demand, and a New York Times bestseller, number one bestseller for his book, we'll talk about also. I have to say that I hadn't spoken to him in a long time, and we spoke for an hour before the show, and we didn't actually get to talking about the show. We were talking. And in that talking, he shared, and he knows this, so much about himself, how he sees the world, how he manages through life. And I had such a sense that I was talking to someone who knew himself well, who had been through a journey, who had come out another side of it, and from that space is able to truly support people where in the journey space that they are. And so I am honored that our guest is John King today. A little later on, we're going to have a delightful musical duo, country music with Martin and Kelly. It's going to be a great show, all on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition when we come back right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety, but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi meditation. Phi meditation helps you harness the power of I am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi Beads at PhiBeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, Beads.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with your host, the Master of Change, Filippo Boccaccio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows on our archive page at LifeChangesShow.com, which include luminaries such as comedian Michael Collier, actress Gabriella Wright, performing artist James Hood, and author Ken Honda. Email your comments and questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. You can also comment via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I am host Filippo Voltaggio online with our co-host and producer, Mark Lejeur.
I am excited. This John King and his work and tribal leadership was a huge influencer in my early career and has been a touchstone all the way, and can't wait to hear his new efforts and what we're going to share tonight.
Me too. He's a rogue scholar. He's a New York Times number one best-selling author of Tribal Leadership. He's a keynote speaker in demand, an international teacher, coach, program leader, and so much more that I hope we get to touch on. Welcome, John King, to the Life Changer Show.
Oh, thank you very, very much. I feel like I have to put a correction in right at the very beginning. Not a correction so much as to just clarify the word for Rhodes Scholar. Rogue Scholar is R-O-G-U-E, Rogue Scholar. I never actually made it to Oxford. But what a pleasure to be here. And I feel like I'm completely wrapped in and immersed and present in the production of this show. I was listening to your commercial, and they mentioned the Fibonacci sequence and the golden mean, and that's part of my work. And then you've got the country western thing, which is like I grew up inside of. So I feel real at home. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, welcome home, John. and in a sense, that's an interesting thing to say, because you feel like a person who is at home in your skin, at home wherever you are, in which case that has to come from a strong foundation of something.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, the first thing is my skin is very old. So after a while, you know, you kind of get comfortable. It's like an old shoe. You kind of get real comfortable with it. But where did it come from? I've had an eclectic life, to say the very least. And along the way, I have just had amazing teachers and coaches and mentors and support. So, every kind of new adventure is just a blessing for me.
You know, the fact that you could answer that question is in such short form and just say, I've had an eclectic life. And actually the fact that you feel comfortable just sending us a bio to post that includes maybe 1/100th of the things that you've done, and not just done, but done very successfully and been acclaimed for, also indicates that you are someone who is comfortable. It's not like, oh, I have to show you how good I am, how many things that I've done. It's just more like, this is relevant to this moment, so I'll give you this much.
Oh, well, that's a very interesting way of looking. Thank you. But I will tell you that there's nothing that I've ever done or been involved with that I did myself. I've been lucky, and I've had to, I've had to deliver the goods, yes. But I've just been surrounded by and by people who kind of cheerleaded me on or opened the door for me or saw something in me, sometimes saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And I had a teacher, his name was Jerome. And Jerome at one point in time said, John, he said, you know, your view of yourself kind of sucks. And I said, it does. And he said, yep. He said, I want you to take on standing inside of I want you to take on standing inside of my experience of who you are for 3 months. And I said, well, sure. And then I realized I had made a big mistake, because the way that he actually looked upon me is something that was much greater than I had any concept of who I was. And for the next 3 months, I was leading transformational programs and doing a lot of work with communities and so on like that. It was a kind of a, wow, what would Jerome say here? Because at those places where I wanted to stop, I couldn't stop if I was going to honor his request. And we got to the end of it, and he said, well, what do you think? And I said, that was the most challenging, difficult thing that I've ever done, Jerome. Can I do it again? And I actually ended up doing it 6 times in 3 month spurts. And I would say that that was one of the greatest growth periods I ever experienced in my life.
So interestingly enough, as part of my monologue, I was going to say another quote from yet another great person. Tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. So if you have the friends that one can admire and look up to, then potentially to see oneself through their eyes is one thing. But so many of us have people around us that aren't cheerleaders. So seeing ourselves through their eyes, it could potentially be destructive.
Yeah, you know, there's a term of art that goes something like this, Filippo. The job of the leader is to listen others into existence is great. And I know it sounds a little bit peculiar because we don't say that, you know, in kind of straight up English, listening others into existence. But the fact of the matter is that you have no real existence in another person's world except the listening that they grant you. You know, we've all been around somebody who you needed to make it, you know, you needed to make it with their make their hit parade, and they just weren't going to let you do it. And the way that they kind of interacted with you or listened to you was that you were less than, you know, you were kind of a bozo. And the truth about it is, it's very, very difficult when you're being interacted with or listened to that way to be anything other than a bozo or less than. So that gives us a clue that what we want to do is put around us people who listen to us as greater than we are. Because what that does is that lifts the cap off and allows us to perform beyond. And if you happen to be something like an Olympic athlete, for example, the job of the coach cannot perform like you can. He can't run as fast or jump as high. But what he can do is he can listen to you as someone who can do that. He can listen to you as gold medal capable. And that is the job of the coach. That is the job of the teacher. That is the job. That is what your mother did for you. That is what your best teachers did for you. And if you're smart, what you do is you seek people like that out and you surround yourself with them so that you are actually being listened into existence is extraordinary.
You know, actually, you mentioned an Olympic athlete, and it reminded me that you are and were very much of a dancer out in the world, out in the very big world of television and Broadway and all of that, right?
Yeah, 100 years and 100 pounds ago. that was quite a... quite a wonderful, fun, and irresponsible period of my life.
Oh, I'd love to dive deep into that. But what I was remembering is you and I conversing about the fact that when you set out to become a dancer, one who would eventually be on the Carol Burnett Show and every other TV show that was on at the time, et cetera, et cetera. You didn't have the people around you that saw you. How did you get through that
period? Well, you know, a lot of times you do things kind of as in reaction to, particularly early on in your career. When I was about 19 years old, I was a ballroom dancer, and my partner and I had won 7 or 8 national championships. And I was like on fire to dance. And so I went to London. And before I went to London, my teacher, who was an extremely powerful teacher and rigorous teacher and was English, ranked 3rd in the world, said to me, John, he said, you're going to go to London. And he said, and while you're there, you're going to go see West Side Story. I said, yep, I can't wait. He said, and John, he said, I know you, and you're going to want to do West Side Story and do that kind of dancing. And I said, yeah, probably so. And he said, John, you're not good enough.
Mm.
And I had to bite my tongue because he was my teacher. But I'll tell you, I never forgot it.
Wow.
And the next, you know, ultimately when I got to the end of my dance career, I danced for 17 years before I went over the hill. And when I got to the point where I was reflecting on my career and I had reached the elite status of doing Broadway and television and films and touring and stuff like that, but I could no longer do it. So it was all I had was reflection. And I realized, you know what? I did a whole career angry at my teacher and doing, I will show you.
Mm.
So there's a lot of us that get to that.
Mm.
You can accomplish a lot, but here's the cost of it. You never have any fulfillment, any satisfaction, any joy. And that's costly. And when I realized that, I realized, man, I gave up, you know, essentially 20 years of my life to basically being in the state of anger and resentment.
Wow. Wow. So this leads me to virtue builds character. Character mm-hmm. unfolds destiny. So there's all kinds of stuff in there. So first of all, who said this and why are we talking about it?
Well, it came from Aristotle. And I was looking to cause some kind of a breakthrough in my thinking. I had already written several books and I had taught a lot of people and I was doing well, but I knew there's more. And so I went to Aristotle and I began reading a letter that he wrote to his son. His son's name was Nicomachus. And his father's name was Nicomachus. And so he was writing a letter to his son about something his father had taught him. And it's called the Nicomachean Ethic. And in that, he talks about virtue. And the Greeks looked at virtue a bit differently than we do. We look at it as some kind of holy thing. But what the Greeks looked at it as is the practice of excellence. In fact, the way that they say it, it's a little convoluted, but they say it's the practice of the habit of choosing the mean between the extremes of too little and too much in the matter of your actions and in the matter of your emotions. And the very first virtue you work on, you work on virtues that are your inner virtues, you know, the inner work. And the inner virtues are courage, temperance, justice, and prudence.
Hmm.
So when you look at what's the mean between the extremes of too little and too much, let's say in terms of courage, too little courage is cowardice. And too much courage is recklessness. The virtue is called courage.
Hmm.
And so what he does is he teaches us, and by the way, we all learned this by the time we were 4 years old, inside of a story that our parents told us, we just didn't know, and they didn't know they were teaching us the golden mean. That the story is Goldilocks and the Three Bears, where she goes into the bear's house, and one chair is too big, and one's too small, and one's just right. And the porridge is too hot, and it's too cold, and it's just right. And the bed is too soft or too hard, and it's just right. And when you teach this to a four-year-old, what they're learning is the golden mean. I didn't know it at the time, and neither did my mother know that that's what she was teaching me, but that is what we're being taught. So too little and too much in terms of temperance. Temperance is about our emotions. Too little is apathy. Too much is hysteria. And you think about it. How often am I either apathetic or hysterical when what there is to do is to be temperate? That's virtue. Or in the area of prudence, where you're making decisions and you're making choices. You make a snap decision, not prudent. You gather too much information and you just keep on gathering and you never come to the decision, not prudent. In between, the proper amount of time and the proper amount of information to make the prudent choice may not be the right choice, but at least it will be a prudent choice. So what you do is you practice those virtues until they become autonomic. You know, like your heartbeat, you don't have to think about that. You practice some things in life like honor. You practice some things in life like honesty, like loyalty, like trust. You practice things in life like integrity and commitment until they become autonomic. And when they are, and they're in, that has the aggregate of that has formed your character. And that character unfolds as your destiny in life. So what I get to work with is I get to work with people who practice virtues, have formed their character, they know who they are, and we now start to unfold what would be an interesting destiny for them.
Wow. So when you say I get to work with, it was interesting to find out some of the people you actually do get to work with. So I said, you know, John King, have you thought about being president? And so he had a chuckle over that. I was being very
I was, you know what, Filippo, I was thinking, you know, I wonder what this guy's smoking. I bet it's really good.
And so, of course, the book Tribal Leadership, who most people would know you as the co-author, and the book rates in the top 20 of all leadership books, and then in the New York Times, number one best-selling book for a long time. My thought goes to the people that are if they have what you just shared, then they're ready to be leaders, right?
Yes. Yes, that is true. And by the way, the fact that it became a number one, you know, 10,000 books come out a year, so it was who knew? You know, that it wasn't written to be a bestseller. It was written to be something that would hopefully contribute to people, make life a little more accessible to them, you know, being more effective and so on like that. But it did catch on. And so I'm grateful for that, eternally grateful for that. But the people that I get to work with, I teach in leadership academies around the world. So leadership academies in the Middle East, leadership academies in Central Asia and in Southeast Asia. Fundamentally and primarily, I get to teach in a part of the world that is mostly Muslim world. So it's a completely different culture. However, the interesting thing is that in these parts of the world, in Central Asia, in the Middle East, these people are tribal. And they're very present to their tribe. So if you go to Oman, there are 13 tribes in Oman, and they're all distinct. If you go to Uzbekistan, their people are tribal, and they're very, very clear about it. And so tribal leadership is a curiosity to them. And what I discovered, see, I didn't know this, but when I was a kid, my dad was a geologist, and we grew up on Indian reservations in Arizona and New Mexico and Utah. And so I lived my early life in a little Hopi village called Oribe. And I don't know how, but somehow by osmosis, I absorbed something about tribes. And the thing about tribes is that it is not a celebration of the individual. It's a celebration of the community.
Mm.
And so when you go to Qatar or Saudi Arabia or Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan or Russia or Southeast Asia, Malaysia, when you talk to people at the level of community, at the level of partnering, at the level of team, they get it. It's not such an easy sell in America. in America were pretty much all about, you know, how great I am and how not so great you are, what I call stage three. But they're already there. And these are some of the most well-educated people on the planet. When I show up, I'm the most uneducated guy in the room. These people have advanced doctorals and postdoctoral degrees from Oxford and Cambridge and Harvard. And they are in finance or mathematics or something like that. And they are being groomed by the powers that be in their country, the tribal leaders, so to speak, to be the next generation of leadership, not only for their country, but now we're in a world where we're all co-joined, so for their region. So we get to train country by country, individual by individual. We get to train regional leaders. And then because we're working in the Middle East, in Central Asia, in Southeast Asia, in Russia, we actually pull them together in global conferences so they all meet each other. And what happens is they transcend their tribe and fall in love with each other and design working relationships in business or in government or in NGO kind of projects that are lifetime projects. And we've trained about, over the last, I'd say, 15 years, we've probably trained, my guess is close to 1,500 to 1,800 of these people who are now have, the early ones have grown up and they're now running their countries. Who knew?
So in a sense, you are a president many times over, or a leader by helping the leaders become better leaders.
Well, yeah, you know, the way I look at leadership is that what you are is you're an ecologist, and your job is to create an environment where people can arise organically as leaders. You know, and you want them to arise, and then you pour water on them so they grow. But your job is not to mess with them too much. Your job is to tend to the clearing that they arise in. So you care of the ecology of the environment around them. You know, like one of the things that pollutes virtually every ecology for virtually every human being and literally cuts right off at the knees the ability to be an effective leader is a polluting factor called gossip. Gossip is cancer in a leader's world. So the true leader is always looking around, and when they're seeing things that are pollutants, I'm going to say, in their environment, they address that. They deal with the clearing. They don't mess with the people. And the people will take care of themselves. The people will grow. These people are highly motivated, and they're very intelligent, and they know their job way better than I could possibly. But what they don't have is they don't have an environment or an ecology around them that supports them to be great. So that's what we provide.
That and so much more. I enjoy listening to you, John, and learning from you. And if you all are enjoying, as we are all learning here right now, you can go to tribalpossibilitiespartners.com, tribalpossibilitiespartners.com. And of course, there are a couple books out there, right? The Coaching Revolution, Tribal Leadership. There's Tribal Triads. That coming out, or you're still writing that?
Yeah, we've got two more coming out. One is Tribal Possibilities, and the other one is Tribal Triads, which is really about the geometry of effective networking.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that when we come back. Okay. And though we'll only have a few minutes, wanted to touch on the fact that John says No matter what business or pursuit you are in the blank business. And what business is that? So when we come back with John King, again, tribalpossibilitiespartners.com, we'll talk more about that. And a little later on, we're going to have our Ask Dorothy question. And then our musical guests, Martin and Kelly, all on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA, with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online at lifechangesshow.com, via Twitter at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are talking virtue builds character, character unfolds destiny with the great John King, the New York Times number one best-selling author of Tribal Leadership, keynote speaker, teacher, coach, program leader, an all-around great guy. John, I'm going to take a big leap of faith here and say that we will have opportunity to talk on this show again. And so at that time...
Oh, I certainly hope so. But you know what? I there's something I can't step over right here, Filippo. The little dog that could. I have a guy to introduce you to. He was one of my students. And he's the dean of the business school at American University in Yerevan, Armenia. Oh. His name is Sergei Tantuzian. And Sergei wrote a book about a little dog that could, but he based it on the principles of tribal leadership.
Oh, wow.
It is an amazing, amazing coinkadink. And so I am going to have to turn you on to a great guy, Sergei. Partner, and he will be thrilled to meet you, and you guys can kind of like compare notes on the little dog. His doggy's name is Volt, which Voltaggio.
Oh,
small world, item 34.
Very nice. Well, thank you for that. And with that, I was going to say that I think we're going to have to talk about tribal possibilities and tribal triads at another time, because I want to go, I think we all do, want to go much deeper, and we know you can.
You know, I will tell you that the idea of triads, that's the good stuff.
Mm.
That's the good stuff. This stuff is all, it's all good. It's all good, but there is stuff that will change your life and change your way of relating in the world and will really literally alter the way that you create your relationships for the rest of your life. And this whole idea of tribal triads will do that.
Well, I can't wait to have that conversation. And it's interesting when you say this is the good stuff, this will change your life. And yet, as you know, I was taking notes while we were chatting, and they were copious. And I was thinking, I didn't know this, or I didn't understand this before. Like the various things that are mentioned in the book, but when I hear you describe them, really, really helped me go deeper, like living life as a work of art, the minimalist concept, and on and on. But here's one thing that I know, since I mentioned you could talk about for the next couple of minutes, if you would, please. No matter what business or pursuit you are in the what?
Yes, perfect, 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 perfect. You see, it doesn't matter whether you're an engineer or a lawyer or you are an artist or what you do, you're a mom. It doesn't matter what you are and what you consider your business to be. You're not in that business, not really. What you're in is you're in the relationship business. And if you can't handle this, because that's what humans are. Humans are in the relationship business first, and then God gives you real estate as a vehicle to, practice the virtues of being in relationship. But ultimately, you are better than halfway down the road if you understand that it doesn't matter what you do, you're in the relationship business first, and then whatever the specialty or distinction you have is really the gift of the vehicle to now bring relationship into being.
Wow. So you are in the relationship business no matter what business you're in. Well, you are in the relationship business for sure. And can I ask you, real briefly, and I know part of this is a sad story, so I don't know if you could net this one out, but how did you get to be so good at relationship?
Well, Filippo, they say that wisdom comes from experience and experience comes from failure. Mm. And I have had some pretty kind of life-crushing failures in my life, particularly around the world of in the realm of relationship. In my early life, I was one of these kind of golden boy talented guys that just basically was blazing through. But what I was doing was I was using people a lot, and I didn't know it. I just was entitled, and I just kind of kept on going through and winning and getting ahead and stuff like that. And during the course of that, I got married and married a beautiful woman that I just loved head over heels. And she hung with me for quite a while. We had a beautiful daughter together, but she fired me. And that was a shocker. And then about 6 or 7 years later, I met another woman, and she was kind of the polar opposite, where my first wife was kind of Grace Kelly, tall, regal, cool, Nordic, blonde, beautiful. The second one was a little chili pepper. She was short. She was dark. She was hot. She was funny. She still is the funniest person I've ever met in my life. And we got together, and it was it was an A or an F in every encounter and stuff like that. But ultimately we got married, and in a very short period of time, she found out what a fraud I was, and she fired me too. And I went, you know what? The first wife, her name's Kathy, and the second wife, her name's Lynn, have nothing in common. But towards the end of the relationship, you know, when things kind of get loud, they were both saying exactly the same things to me, and they were saying them in exactly the same tone of voice. And I know that Lynn was not calling Kathy up for coaching. But they were saying, I mean, literally the same thing.
Wow.
And at a certain point, I had to stop and go, you know, the only common denominator is me. And I think I'm the jerk in this one. Mm. You know, and I had to give it up. I had to, like, give it up. And it was a soul-searching and heart-rending and humiliating kind of process that didn't happen in a minute. But in the interest of growth and development and having a life and moving on with life and so on like that, I had to confront something. And what I really had to confront was my own fraudulence, my own inauthenticity, and just the jerk that I was. And looking into that, I now realized that I did not have the wherewithal or the training to turn my life around. I needed to get people around me quick so that I could kind of begin to take it on. And I went from uncoachable to coachable. And I went from being a no in life to being a yes in life. And I went from being a demand in life to being an invitation in life.
Mm.
And I went from being a person who said I loved people to a man who loved people.
Mm.
And it was a big deal. It was a big deal. It was a personal transformation for me. And I'm an educator, so, you know, the only way that you know anything is you teach it to someone else.
Mm.
Mm. Pretty embarrassing. But, you know, I was able to recover my relationship to Kathy and recover my relationship to Lynn years later. We are great friends now. We are great, great friends. And I do have to say they were right. And I do have to say it's really interesting because we've gone different pathways in our lives. And with each one of them, I still think they're extraordinary women and brilliant and all of this. But to tell you the truth, when I'm with each one of them for more than about 10 or 15 minutes, I am thinking, thank God I'm still not married to this woman.
Well, they served a purpose. You served a purpose in their life, too.
You grow. They've grown their way. And by the way, both of them learned something with me because they both married princes. They both married, did not like this at the very beginning, but they found guys that were absolute princes, and they married great, great guys.
Mm.
And I had an occasion with Kathy and her husband, Michael, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, where I called her up and I said, we're going to celebrate something. I want to take you to lunch. And she said, okay. And so she and Michael came to lunch and we had lunch. And after it was over, she said, well, okay, what are we celebrating? And I said, you don't know. And she said, no. And I said, Michael, do you know? And he said, no, I don't have an idea. I said, today is the 35th anniversary of our divorce.
Yeah.
And we all hit the floor. You know, we're just dying and everything. But that's the nature of our relationship now, is that it's loving and it's teasing and it's, you know, repartee and everything. And it's where it should be.
Wow. Well, there was so many stories that we could have talked about. I had no idea you were going to go there. And I'm glad you did. I'm glad you are here. Thank you for being... you called yourself a jerk so many times, I don't even want to use the word, but the jerk that could, I mean, because look, you know what I mean? There's another book there. I don't know.
I'll tell you, if I could turn my life around, because I was a criminal, you know, and if I could turn it around and then kind of rise from that because of the people around me, because of the blessing of the people around me and the fact that I made a conscious decision to be coachable and really surrendered. And a lot of times when it didn't feel good to do it, but because of that, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Mm, wow. Wow. John, like I say, as have said, will say, I look forward to much more. I want to remind everybody again, tribalpossibilitiespartners.com. And of course, Tribal Leadership, Tribal Possibilities, and Tribal Triads, which I trust we will be talking about hopefully very soon. John, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to more.
You know, the thing that I have to say just at the very end of this, Filippo, is the greatest gift that a person can give another human being is the gift of their listening. And I want to thank you for that gift. And so blessings to you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's my honor, my privilege, and my pleasure. And I couldn't be more delighted that we've reconnected after 10 years of not seeing each other.
Me too. Thank you so much, John. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy question.
Dear Dorothy, my name is Sharon and I live in Los Angeles. My daughter and grandson are living with their in-laws, and I have been going over to help take care of my grandson every morning, and I'm very worried about some of the symbols they have hanging near the baby's bed and throughout their home. They have a great big blue evil eye symbol over the baby's bed, and I have asked them to move it because it is a bad thing for the baby to have near him. When I asked them to move it, they told me no, and I said I could not come back to their home because the symbol is there to protect them from me. Help me, please. How can I get them to take these evil symbols out of their home? How can I protect my daughter and grandson from this evil?
My dear Sharon, what you perceive to be an evil symbol is known all over the world in many cultures as an extremely protective symbol, which means to the ones possessing it that God is watching over those wherever the symbol is and is protecting the ones who are within its gaze. A feng shui article I found explains the symbol in this way. The round shape and the blue color symbolize heaven and spirituality, and the depiction in the middle, either painted or in bronze, represents a spiritual watchful eye. It can be used for personal protection for babies, animals, outside or inside the house in order to deflect negative energy. Sharon, it is sad that they have banned you from their home and that they have stated that they are using the symbol to protect themselves from you. If you truly wish to assist your daughter and grandson, you could choose to invest some time and money with a family counselor to determine why they feel they need protection from you. If your daughter and her in-laws refuse to attend, please go see someone for yourself. A good counselor can assist you in determining your next best course of action. I trust that you will discover what you might wish to change in you, as it is always about changing ourselves and never truly about changing others.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com. And I'd also like to give a shout out to Josh Hayes, who has introduced us to tonight's musical guest.
Indeed, and our musical guests are amazing. They are one of country's most sought-after must-see country duo. They are Jilly Martin and Ryan Brooks Kelly, known as Martin and Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be on.
Thanks so much for having us.
Glad to have you on. Of all the stories that John King could have shared, knowing what your first song is going to be, what do you think?
I think he lined it right up for us.
He was a great opener.
We'll hire him anytime.
you know what? There's so much I want to talk to the two of you about as well. But since he lined that up, do you want to take it from there? Say something about the song that you're about to sing and we'll go right into it.
Sure. This is one of our own called I'm Gonna Kiss You. And it's just kind of about, you know, those little things and relationships.
Wait, no, you got to say more than that.
Well, Ryan and I were on a long road trip going down to Nashville to do some writing. And we had been in the car for about 20 hours or so. And when I was younger, if I got on my grandmother's nerves, she'd say, you know what I'm going to do to you? I'm going to kiss you. So by the time we got to our writing appointment, we had a few things lined up that we wanted to say to each other.
We did, and I refused to be left on the side of the road, so we wrote a song instead. It's called I'm Gonna Kiss You.
That is awesome, you two. So, okay, here is Martin and Kelly singing their original song, I'm Gonna Kiss You, on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition.
Shoes in a pile by the door.
You trim your beard and leave your hair in the sand.
How about them half-empty water bottles you're never gonna drink?
You know what I'm gonna do to you.
Probably the same thing I'm gonna do to you.
I'm gonna kiss you till you can't see straight. I'm gonna love you, baby. Love you anyway. Sometimes you drive me crazy.
Honey, you do too.
I'm gonna kiss you, I'm gonna kiss you, I'm gonna kiss you.
these girls how they end up against some of this.
Honey, here's a picture that you're gonna miss.
Girl, there's a door if you want out.
Boy, if you don't stop running them out,
I'ma kiss you till you can't see straight. I'm gonna love you, baby. Love you anyway. Sometimes you drive me crazy.
Honey, you do too.
I'm gonna kiss you. I'm gonna kiss you. I'm gonna kiss you.
Sure to sweat the small stuff.
We only fight so we can make up.
I'm gonna kiss you till you can't see straight. I'm gonna love you, baby. Love you anyway. You always drive me crazy.
Honey, you do too.
I'm gonna kiss you. I'm gonna kiss you. I'm gonna kiss you.
I love that song.
It's a true song.
That's a true song. You know, it's funny that you say that, Ryan, because I asked you earlier when we were talking, is that a true song? And then you said something funny like, it's a country song.
We have to be honest. We got no choice.
The best country songs are made up of all the stuff that's going wrong in relationships.
Right. Well, Martin and Kelly, now you can find out more about them on Facebook and on Instagram at Martin and Kelly, all spelled out. And then, of course, on their website, martinkellymusic.com. Kelly is K-E-L-L-Y. So the two of you... When did you know that there was something here musically?
Well, Ryan was putting together an EP, and we had a mutual friend that introduced us to for me to play on a duet that he had written. And so I went in and sang on the song, and we started inviting each other out to shows. And pretty soon after that, it was like, you know what, this is kind of fun to do together. And
while we were in the studio too, we just found our voices blended like they shouldn't on the first time.
Yeah.
And that just kind
of... A lot of harmonies like that we like to do, you know, usually our family harmonies and that kind of stuff. And it just was really fun and natural that it kind of clicked right away.
Well, people are obviously really enjoying this, but people are seeing this, hearing it, and you all have opened for people like Loretta Lynn and Randy Travis, which are, of course, a country music royalty, Willie Nelson and Bonnie Raitt and Dwight Yoakam. I mean, the list goes on, and the people who have invited you on stage to sing with them, was it the Oak Ridge Boys?
They did.
I mean,
yep.
That must have been very cool.
It was for Jill. It wasn't my proudest moment, I don't think.
Why?
I wasn't expecting to be called up on stage, and, you know, they are royalty, and I just look up to them so much. And we were standing side stage watching the end of their set, and before they went on for their encore, they said, "You guys are joining us." And she nearly had to drag me on stage, and Joe Bonsall helped with that, ushered me on stage, and we sang the song, and we were fine. But that was one of the first moments I think I wasn't cool in music.
I know. I don't know if it's because you didn't have a guitar in your hands for it or what, but usually that's like his safety blanket on stage. And but he got out there, and they made us feel right at home. It was pretty great. I'm proud of you for getting out there and getting up the courage to get on the stage.
Wow. We'll listen to you, too. I mean... you know, maybe someday you're going to pull someone up on stage. You're going to know exactly how that feels and know you gave that to them. Hopefully they'll be happy about it too. So what I really enjoyed, just right off the bat is the connection that each of you made for me with why you went into country music each individually.
Yep. Well, growing up, my grandfather always had country music playing, and my grandmother always had music playing. She was a cocktail piano player. So I started singing from a really early age, but loved country, loved the greats, Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn. And Loretta Lynn played kind of the town next door to me growing up, and I couldn't believe she was playing there, but everybody's going to see the Backstreet Boys. And I was like, but the queen of country's playing in Lowell. I need to go see her. It's country music has really been ingrained in me for quite some time.
Yeah, my father played everything from, you know, banjos to bagpipes, and I always loved playing bluegrass in the kitchen with him, and always wanted to play bluegrass, and so country was a natural progression. You know, Vince Gill was one of my heroes when I was a kid. They took me to see him when I was about 3 feet off the ground wearing cowboy boots and a hat. So
you're not much taller now.
I'm not much taller. About 3.5 feet.
Do you still have the hat?
I do, actually. Yeah.
Nice.
I sure do.
Okay, well, much like the stories you're both sharing about your connection with country music, you have a connection, well, several actually, that kind of made me emotional as you were sharing about this next song. Please share.
Yeah, so we have a lot of friends, and especially family. My father and brother both work in the healthcare industry, and they've continued to work all through this time. And both of us have found that our greatest strength is just trying to get people's mind off of everything and performing, as you would say.
I like to be the light that we can be, and this is the way that we know how. And we always, I always love the Mr. Rogers quote that he was talking about his mother. And she said, you know, whenever there's trouble, look for the helpers. There's always somebody helping. And so we kind of took that to heart and wrote a song about it. And it's connected with a lot of people. We're really happy about that. But, you know, just trying to do what we can now and what we're able to share with people.
Well, there's a great official video that you all put out, and we put it on our webpage for Martin and Kelly. Of course, you'll find Martin and Kelly on Facebook and Instagram, and it's posted there as well. And then Martin Kelly music.com. And here we have the pleasure of having Martin and Kelly performing live their song, Look for the Helpers, on the Life Changes Show.
I know it's hard to believe when you turn on your TV. It can wear you down, fill you with hate. Why can't it all just go away? And when you feel like there's nowhere left to turn, look for the helpers, the lovers, the fighters, the friendly face. Look for the ones who risk their lives to keep your loved ones safe. Just like Mr. Rogers used to say, look for the helpers. I can't wait for the day but we can all be safe. Uncovered smiles and crowds for miles, watching friends walk down the aisle. So if you feel like this, like Mr. Rogers used to say, look for the helpers. Raise your glass to the ones that won't just walk away.
Thanks to the helpers,
the lovers, the fire. Thanks to the ones who risk their lives to keep our loved ones safe. Just like Mr. Rogers used to say,
Thank you.
Thank
you. Look for the helpers indeed. And you know what? You're helping. Martin and Kelly, you're helping. You want to help. You want to put smiles in people's on people's faces and joy in their heart. You even learned a couple jokes. So
oh, yes. For when and the songs aren't working, the jokes are there.
When the jokes aren't working, cut to the song.
Exactly.
Just tell us why that was important to you, to add a joke.
I think it's just, you know, it lightens the mood. And, you know, sometimes Ryan needs to tune his guitar a little bit, so I needed to fill the time. And the jokes kind of keep things moving for us. But
and I'm a terrible juggler, so we have to do
especially when you're tuning your guitar. Well, I know that you're busy and starting to get busier as things are opening up from New England to Nashville. I just hope and trust that that keeps moving west and we get to see you in California. In the meantime, we wish you all the best. We are new fans. MartinKellyMusic.com and on Facebook and Instagram, Martin and Kelly. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us. Yes.
What a pleasure. And once again, thank you to Josh for introducing us to your talented cousin.
Yes. Hi, Josh.
And a very talented Josh Hayes is as well, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So with that, that is our show. A big thank you on behalf of our producer, Dorothy Lee, our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Leisure. A big thank you to BBS Radio Network. I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.